Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. If you suffer a sprain, strain, or fracture, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at 435 and Nall in Overland Park. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
This is Sports Sunday.
Here's something that is deeply, deeply upsetting. Cut Pat Mahomes to make the spaces if you have to. I don't care. Not good. You feel pretty good about your pick right now, right? Oh, Mahomes had to bring 4.8. Boom, you're dead. Boom, you're dead.
With Joshua Briscoe.
We know it's going to end in a heartbreaking playoff loss. I mean, like, and do you move Travis Kelce to quarterback? Because I probably would. We saw him. But he's got a cannon, man.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Quick refresher here on the weirdness coming from the Royals today. Strange lineup that the bottom three are Cordero, Mejia, and Brett Phillips. Mike Montgomery will start on Monday. Ronald Bolaños starts today for the Royals. Don't know exactly what that strategy will ultimately be. If we get audio from Mike Matheny, we'll play it for you before the show wraps today. But I don't know what our plan is there. So a weird lineup coming. And we've ridiculously made it through an hour of conversation here without really spending much time on LDT, which we talked about quite a bit Friday night on Almost Entirely Sports. If you want to hear that, I'd say go grab AES.show, put that in your URL bar, and you can get AES podcasts for anywhere right through there, or you can just search for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts. But also, the Chiefs signed last night guard Kelechi Osemele. He was most recently with the Jets. He got cut after getting an unapproved surgery. His doctors wanted him to get the surgery. The Jets did not approve it. There's grievances and whatnot. The Jets ultimately released him. But whenever he's been healthy, he's been really good. Like, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago that he was an All-Pro and a two-time Pro Bowler with the then Oakland Raiders. So I think that shoring up that spot within 24 hours of LDT opting out of the season makes a lot of sense. And soon we'll bring you what Andy Reid said about LDT and his decision to opt out. I thought it was really insightful.
He was also on the Ravens Super Bowl team.
Yes. He was with the Ravens for, I think, 4 years. I'm guessing you have the thing up right now.
Pull it up in 1 second.
That's fine. I believe it was 4 years with the Ravens, 4 years with the Raiders, and then like 3 games with the Jets. But he was with the Ravens, Raiders, and Jets, most recently being the Jets, for just a few games last year before injury took over. But it's a move that I'm perfectly happy with. I think he's immediately the presumed starter at one of the guard spots. Strong and huge, not the athlete that you
6'5", 330.
Look, big and strong and huge. I would pick him and 10,000 rats to defend me. Imagine not listening to the end of the last hour and just like skipping to the beginning of this one on the podcast and just hearing that for no reason. I am a little surprised again by the way that we've seen the offensive line evolve a little bit. Specifically here, Osemele is not, he's not a for lack of a better cliche, like the dancing bear type or whatever. It's like, oh, you know, the Andy Reid for so many years has been all about, you know, athletic linemen that can move around a lot. Osemele's not really that guy. He's kind of a mauler, which I'm totally good with at a guard spot. We've even talked about that some. Like, I haven't actually looked at his timeline, but I bet Ryan Tracy is excited about this. That's sort of my prediction with Kelechi Osemele. So I bet he ends up starting at one of the guard spots. It would make sense from the step in at right, because that's where LDT vacated, but you could flip Wiley over to right guard from left if you needed to and make that work however you see fit. But I feel better about that also. That the Chiefs actually have like pretty good tackle depth right now between Mike Rimmers and Lucas Niang and a handful of guys. Like the list actually runs relatively deep. I was going to find my whole list of names here. I don't have it off the top of my head. But Martinez Rankin, like there is a number of guys that I know I'm forgetting some. Where you think, oh yeah, specifically being Rimmers being brought in, Rankin's still around. There's one more. Greg Sinat. Never found my list off the top of my head right there. I got Chiefs offensive line depth for days. But I actually feel pretty good about the tackle depth at the moment. I don't feel as confident about any of those guys playing guard. Rankin probably the most so. So Rankin, Wiley, and Osemele, maybe they compete for the two spots among the three of them, and one of them will get hurt. Like, over the course of a season, you will need offensive line depth. Everyone does. So there's your little crash course on what you can expect from the Chiefs' newest guard as they end up finding a way to work around not having Montverde Tardif this year. One thing, though, that we talked about on Friday that I want to bring you just a little bit of, it was after the LDT news had broke, but we talked to Lyle Graverson of Arrowhead Addict, and he had an article on Arrowhead Addict about the Chiefs' name and if it is something that needs to be reexamined and what we should be doing to try to elevate our conversation about it, if that makes sense. So much of our discussions around the topic of name changes ends up resorting back to the same few tired tropes, and it gets really tiresome because it does sort of feel like we end up speaking different languages when we're not really making up any ground. We're not really accomplishing anything because someone says, like, hey, this is something that we should be talking about, and you say, it's not a racial slur, it's fine. It's like, well, that's not, I didn't say that it was, but using Native American mascots has, like, detrimental effects sometimes. Oh, but it's actually from the mayor. Okay, yeah, I didn't say that it wasn't, and it kind of is and kind of isn't, and that story doesn't really make you look a lot better in this from this perspective, all of that. It's complicated. And if your intent is to make it not complicated, you're going to end up only even attempting to understand a very small fragment of this story. And so what Lyle did, and you'll hear his kind of the concerns he had heading into this story for him personally, where I think even if you are hesitant to even have this conversation, I think hearing from Lyle will probably ease some of your hesitations because he had them as well. But he talked to Dr. Stephanie Freiberg, who is the expert of experts in this regard, professor of psychology at University of Michigan, a member of the Tulalip tribes. She's testified before the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, has been inducted into Stanford's Multicultural Hall of Fame, and is a co-author of the 2008 study on the psychological consequences of American Indian mascots. That happened more than a decade ago. This isn't new. This isn't new research. This isn't new conversations. We're just now having it about now. So Lyle did a really, really good job of asking questions that a lot of people are asking and then presenting the answers from a perspective that isn't just the same reiterated things that circle around in a Facebook comment thread. So I thought this conversation was worth trying to bring to another audience here this morning. So here's Lyle Graverson and I, what we talked about Friday night here on 810. I started off by asking him if he could first kind of lay out some of his concerns and personal hesitations that he had coming into the story.
Yeah, first let me say, I mean, a lot of people instantly, the comments that I got when they saw that I had written on the subject was, oh, you know, the cancel culture and oh, goodness, and all that stuff. And yeah. I'm not a cancel culture guy. Like, I hate just not getting the information and having an honest discussion about what the facts are. I mean, that was really actually the desire where this piece came from. It was not just like, hey, let's jump on the culture, cancel culture bandwagon. Like, that's not me at all. And like I wrote in the piece, I'm emotionally attached to the name Chiefs. Like, I don't want would not be the word that I would ever use in terms of the Chiefs name. I don't want it to change. I'm used to it. I've been cheering for him for 30 years. But if I'm going to be a person that claims that, you know, I think people should listen to both sides of the argument and get the details and make an informed decision, I realized I wasn't informed. Like, yeah. I was sitting there thinking, well, Chiefs isn't offensive like the Washington name was, so why would people think it need to change? And so I set out to research that. And what I really, when I started, before I even talked to Dr. Freiberg or reached out to her, what I realized when I started reading some of the positions was Chiefs fans' arguments for why it shouldn't change didn't even match the reasons that the Native Americans that want it to change were giving for needing to change. And so I went, well, there's like a disconnect there. Like, it doesn't match. And so if people don't agree with what I wrote or agree with what Dr. Freiberg wrote, you know, that's their right. But I at least wanted, like, let's at least make intelligent, informed arguments about it, as opposed to just, you know, yelling on social media and to me just making our fan base kind of look uninformed and bad. So so it was really kind of a let's get educated on this topic kind of thing more than anything.
Yeah, I think that's really, really valuable, because to that exact point, I first sort of ever thought about it at all in a communications class in college, where a professor had us discuss an article. It was the first time I'd ever heard the word mascotting. And it kind of opened my eyes a little bit to, like, oh, this is kind of a strange thing that we do. And since then, I feel like even earnest attempts to have this conversation, you bring up some of the things in this article, and then the response is about the former mayor, and it's like, hey man, that we're not talking about the same thing here. And I think this article does a good job of kind of pulling that together. So you talked to Dr. Freiberg, a professor of psychology at the University of Michigan, a member of the Tulip tribes, T-U-L-A-L-I-P tribes. She's testified before the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, has been inducted into Stanford's Multicultural Hall of Fame, and is a co-author of the 2008 study on the psychological consequences of American Indian mascots. Safe to say, an expert on the topic. And I just kind of want to work through some of the things you guys discussed. I am interested by this idea that, you know, hey, the Chiefs have done some amount of reaching out to Native Americans in the area and trying to connect some of the dots between their imagery and actual Native peoples. And, you know, her answer kind of went back and forth from this doesn't really help for a large number of people, and also this shouldn't be the only way that you interact with Native American communities. In that kind of conversation, what did you find interesting specifically about that bit?
I think kind of just the standpoint of you can always find somebody to back up your opinion, but her point was, and there were some people that challenged it and made some arguments that I went, that's a fair question. But I think the numbers that she used in the piece that she gave me was that it was something like 67% of the Native Americans that were highly engaged in their culture found any sort of mascots to be offensive. And I want to say, when I was doing some research on my own, it was closer to 50-50 of just the overall population of Native Americans that she talked to. But the ones that were what she called highly engaged with their culture were the ones that tended to be the most against the use of any sort of Native American mascot. So I think, and I think it was in Sam Mellinger's piece that he did right after the Washington change was announced, that Mark Donovan even kind of admitted that it would be a fair criticism that they kind of stacked the deck in terms of the Native Americans that they consulted with. So the Chiefs are, you know, and I don't want to vilify the Chiefs too much on this, because, I mean, if you compare them to Washington, I mean, it's been, what, like 40 years since they changed their logo or something, maybe even longer than that. I can't remember exactly what year they did that. And so they definitely recognized, before things like woke and cancel culture were a thing, like, this is probably not the path we want to go down, and made lots of changes. Does that mean that they shouldn't continue to have those conversations, especially maybe with Native Americans that aren't just there to support what they're doing and have some tough conversations? I think they probably should.
Yeah, I think that's an absolutely fair clarification that, the Chiefs did a better job of separating some of the imagery than the Cleveland Indians did, where Chief Wahoo went away like a year or two ago, that Washington did by finally being forced out of their name and imagery. But, you know, I even kind of I kind of cringe, to be honest, even at just like the word offended, because I think at this point it's kind of lost all meaning. You know what I mean?
Right, that's fair.
But something that Dr. Freiberg, I thought, did a good job of explaining, and I think you left this door open for also, is the idea of, if you take offense out of it, you have some people saying, oh, this is actually honoring to Native people, which is something that Dr. Freiberg doesn't necessarily agree with, that she disagrees with, honestly. But also the idea of how it can minimize Native people to the warrior quality, and whenever it's your mascot, then the counter is to, you know, use really like horrible references to the Trail of Tears in terms of beating this opponent's sports team, and I found that kind of exploration into some of the deeper issues really interesting. What did you learn in that conversation?
Well, if there's one thing, if there's anybody listening that didn't read the piece, if there's one thing that I would stress, is that their argument is not that Chiefs is an offensive term.
That's right.
And that's the number one argument. Chiefs is an offensive, drop it, kind of response. And mm-hmm. and it's like, that's not what they're saying. It's this kind of creating a caricature out of Native Americans, kind of like this cartoonish image, and even if they're not using a logo that does that, then you've got, she brought up a couple times, fans dressing in costumes and painting their faces and just making kind of a I don't know what the good descriptor is, but not something that comes across as honoring mm-hmm. To those Native peoples. And she even, because obviously she's a psychologist, talked about you know, how being exposed to that leads to lower self-esteem and anxiety and depression issues for some younger Native Americans that they studied, and that you can say your intent is to honor, but if this is the side effect, then what are we doing here, kind of thing. So, so I thought that was interesting. And then the other one that just bugs me is when people, like you said, bring up the mayor, and it's like, that doesn't change any of the points that they're making, because if there's still fans dressing in those costumes and bringing those things up, whether it was named after a mayor doesn't matter. That doesn't change any of those issues. And not to mention that if they're talking about not liking imitating them, if the mayor got the name Chief because he founded a branch of the Boy Scouts where they, you know, copy Native American traditions, again, you're not really helping your argument with what they're complaining about when you bring up the history with the mayor and all that.
Yeah.
So it was just interesting to talk to her.
Yeah. The whole article is really interesting. Again, I'm on Arrowhead Addict right now. I tweeted it out earlier today. If you go to Lyle's Twitter account, at Lyle Graverson, you'll find him tweeting about it there as well. One thing that I honestly just kind of hit me, you're talking about, you know, the idea of it being honoring. You mentioned some of the negative impacts that it has, which I would hope people would, I would hope that if you said, hey, this, you using this people group that is a living people group in the country you're playing these games in, and that has been really mistreated by the country that is hosting these games right now, something else that she talks about a little bit that kind of goes into like, hey, like America needs to deal with its place in Native American history. But even that off to the side, if the negative isn't enough reason to look at this and want it to go away, the negative impacts to go away, the idea that it's honoring would imply that there are positive impacts. And I'm just going to read a quote from her here from your story. While the Chiefs may claim they intend to honor Native peoples, the science does not support this assertion. The science clearly demonstrates that there are no benefits for Natives being used as mascots. Using Natives as mascots is related to lower self-esteem, less achievement-related aspirations, greater anxiety, depression, and suicide ideation. None of these things are what you would associate with something done in the name of honoring a group. And again, I mean, to your point, like, and to this discussion, I think we just kind of have to let that part of it go, in terms of this is actually helping somehow, when there's just not any evidence of that. At some point, I think the uncomfortable end result there is admitting that you don't really care what the impact is because you like the name. I mean, I'm not trying to force anyone into that box, but that is just sort of as more and more noise kind of gets removed from the conversation, I keep finding that being one of the things that's left over. Do you think that's fair? Would you add or tweak that?
No, I totally think that's fair. And in my opinion, and this is, I'm just completely talking for myself now. I'm completely taking Dr. Freiberg out of this. To me, the only way you keep the name is if you bring in, like, basically representatives of all the tribes and all the different groups and say, okay, if there was a way for us to keep the name, what would we have to do to partner with you to make it so that we were helping you feel like get a positive message or impact out? So where all Native groups could look and go, we're better off because of what the chiefs are doing, kind of thing, to combat some of these things. And even then, there may just be some groups that go, no, we, like, it's just not a something that we're good with. But I think, and it may not be this year, it may not be next year, I think eventually, if it doesn't become a true partnership, almost kind of like something like Florida State has done with the Seminole tribe in Florida, I just don't see how long-term we don't eventually get to that point. I think you're going to see things like dressing at games and maybe even the CHOP go away very soon. They may get to kind of kick that can down the road if there ends up not being fans at games because of the whole COVID situation. But I think that's going to happen relatively quickly. Yeah. But beyond that, if they don't want it to turn into a Washington situation where you've got people, you know, protesting and it becomes a big ordeal and then corporate sponsors are forcing, you know, I put in the piece, I'd love it if the Chiefs were proactive and didn't have their hand forced.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that could mean a name change, or like I said, at least really have conversations with Native American groups, not just the ones that have already said they'll support you. And we had several comments, and you never know who, you can't fact check anything, but there were several comments that said, hey, I'm a Native American and I like the fact that they represent my heritage. What about my opinion? And I'm certainly not downplaying anybody's opinion that if they have that and it's something that they're proud of. I think burying their heads in the sand and hoping it goes away is just not the option. Like, you can't, and just going, well, the term Chiefs isn't offensive, or we were named after a mayor. Like, those, we're to the point now where that can't be where the conversation's at. They're going to have, like, real conversations and see if it's something that they can do. Because I do think, and again, maybe with the psychological stuff, maybe it's not, but if you were actually really supporting Native American causes and getting their messages out, I mean, it's a group in this country that doesn't have a big platform, and the NFL is a huge one. So, I mean, to me, there's some potential there but they aren't really taking advantage of that. So it's hard for them to then go, well, we're honoring, or we're kind of things that just sounds like an excuse to try and get away with, to keep doing what you're doing. So it's a hard situation. I'm certainly glad it's not up to me to solve it, but it's definitely one that I hope that they're proactive in addressing, and that I just wish more fans would kind of educate themselves on the situation as opposed to just going, Chiefs isn't offensive like Washington's name was, so why are we having this conversation, kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, this is a little bit of a branching off of that, but, you know, sometimes you'll get, like, just, you know, it might not be Chiefs merchandise, but just like shirt designs that have like a skull and an Indian headdress or whatever. And it's like, oh, that's cool. That's a cool look. And then you, like, take a few seconds to realize how wild it is that, you know, in that instance, there's a culture. And specifically, if it is like, here's a skull and a headdress, that's even worse. But, like, you know, right. here's a culture that becomes fashion. Like, we try not to do that, generally speaking. It's something that even I think for a lot of people, even for other minority groups that oftentimes don't get the full benefit of the doubt, or like the full kind of honor of not being, to, for lack of a less a less loaded word, I guess, being appropriated. There's still at least a block sometimes where you're like, oh yeah, no, like wearing blackface is super not okay. We're all on board with that one. But wearing, like, quote-unquote war paint to a Chiefs game is, like, maybe okay? Though at least a lot of people would argue that it is. It does feel to me like there are certain red flags, certain sirens that go off for a lot of minority people groups that we say, ooh, that's not okay. For whatever reason, doesn't ultimately get extended to Native Americans. And I don't, honestly, it might be because a lot of people don't have a Native American friend. You know what I mean? Like, it has become such a separated culture group in a lot of ways. I don't know. That's totally guessing. And I don't know if there's anything from your conversation with Dr. Freiberg that you feel like interacts with that on a useful level or not. But it's just something that I've been thinking about.
No, I think it just goes back to almost like you aren't even thinking about the real people. You're thinking about the cartoon stereotypical image you see in your head from watching old, like, Western cowboy and Indian kind. You know what I mean? It's almost like we've got that vision of Native Americans as our go-to thought, as opposed to actual people that are just like us living in this country right now.
Yeah.
So I think that... And just to go off what you said, and I'm not going to list any examples right now because I don't even want to get myself in that.
I know.
If you think of stereotypes of other racial groups, you would never, like, dress up like that to go to a game and think that it was going to be okay.
Right.
Like, I mean, just you could probably think of a half dozen off the top of your head kind of thing, and you would be like, yeah, no, you wouldn't do that. And
yeah.
So there does kind of feel like that there's a double standard there, but because it's always been that way and because there's not a real loud voice publicly to complain about it, that it just kind of gets, like, overlooked.
So,
yeah,
I think you're right, and I think that goes back to, again, if you're saying we're using this culture but the culture doesn't make you think at all about the people, then how can that be honoring or in any way helpful to the people? Like, I think that's the question that people need to probably attempt to answer. Because even you say, you know, like, if there's a way that they can sort of spin it that can be ultimately helpful, I'm not sure what that looks like. I mean, it can be money, but at the end, you're still, you know, you bang a drum before a football game. You can bless it before the game or before the season or whatever, but it still is so reductive, it seems.
Right. And I'm certainly not saying, hey, maybe they should get together and see if there's a big enough check that they can cut to make it go away. I mean,
right.
That would obviously not be the solution. But I maybe there is, I don't know that there is. I just, you know, I think of the Florida State, like I said, seminal relationship there and how they really have kind of embraced it, and it's a tradition. And I think they make the uniforms for the Native American that actually rides out at the start of each football game. And, like, it's become kind of a source of pride. And again, I don't know. We may even be past the point where something like that, a true partnership, could happen. But if the Chiefs could do something to further the message of Native Americans, it sure seems like it's a group of people that could use somebody with the money and influence and platform like the NFL has to be on their side. Because it just doesn't feel like they're kind of out there by themselves and then have only gotten the movement that they did, like, in Washington because of all the other, you know, racial related stuff that's going on right now. Because, you know, Dan Snyder wouldn't have changed it if all that other stuff hadn't, you know, changed.
For sure.
So yeah, like I said, it's a tough situation, and I started this all off, like, I love my Chiefs gear. I love all that stuff, and I'm emotionally attached to it. But at a certain point, you have to put your personal feelings aside and selfish reasons, and go, okay, when I actually look at things, what's the actual right thing to do here?
It's Lyle Graverson of Arrowhead Addict. I really appreciate that conversation. I at the very least feel like it is one of a very, very few times, specifically to the conversation of the Chiefs' name and mascotting and the tomahawk chop and the drum and the headdresses and all that. I feel like it's one of very, very few times where there's been a what feels like a genuine conversation trying to understand better and trying to work out some of the wrinkles of this. The one thing that gets me a lot is, again, and we talked about this there some, but a lot of Chiefs fans bring up honor and it being an honoring thing. And I would like to retire the word offensive if possible, because like I said, I think it's kind of lost all meaning. And also, being offended is not always a good reason to change something, but I do think that if it's harmful, that's a good reason to re-examine your actions. If something is offensive, that doesn't mean it's inherently, you know, immoral. But if something is harmful to a group of people that you are at least saying you don't want to be harmful towards, I feel like you have a moral obligation to at least reevaluate that. So if it's honoring, there has to be some sort of benefit that I can't find on this one. And if it's directly harmful, as the doctor, the professor who Lyle talked to lays out the reasoning behind, then that seems like a good reason to reevaluate some things. I'm not even saying that that lends to an exact endpoint, but I do think that if you can admit, all right, so it can be harmful to a lot of Native Americans, and it's not beneficial, but I don't want to change it anyway. You at least have to sort of change your platform from I don't care. You have to change your platform from it's fine and honoring and actually good to I really don't care what anyone else thinks. This is what I want my team name to be. And you can do that. You're just going to sound like a bleep hole. but all, I mean, it's at least honest. And I think there's plenty of space for an honest conversation about it. I just keep getting exhausted by the same four things that get brought back up as a reason that it's not as bad as Washington, or that Chiefs isn't a racial slur, or all of that, which is all true. But whenever you are so intent on boiling it down to 2, 3, 4 talking points, you lose a lot of the things that are more unpleasant and that work much, much less well as an argument point. I don't know. I don't really want to talk about it particularly anymore today, but I really appreciated the conversation with Lyle. And if you haven't read the article yet, there's some more stuff in there that we didn't totally get to that is really helpful, I think. And that's encouraging. And then you scroll down and read the comments and see the same three things that shows there was clearly no even intent on reading the story from a handful of commenters, and it's discouraging again. But that's just sort of the tension that we exist in, I think. We'll take a break whenever we come back. I've got something fun. I've got something chiefy. We've got Andy Reid talking about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. We'll hear from him next.
This is Sports Sunday.
And Giesert, I think the best physical evidence that we have as a culture for evidence of Satan being real.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Like, I've never seen a demon in the biblical sense, but I'm also might have. I might be looking at one right now.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Last segment was rightfully very serious, and we'll get to Andy Reid on LDT here in just a second. But first, pick two. They will defend you. The rest are coming to kill you. Not animals. People. Beards, please be ready with your knee-jerk answer to this, because I think.
Okay, hang on. Let me get a pen and paper.
No,
here.
We're gonna rapid fire. You're gonna have. Okay. I think some quick and easy ones here. Here are your 9 options. 15 Bernie Sanders, 1 Ellen DeGeneres, 7 Don Cheadles, 5 Papa Johns, 2 Dwayne Johnsons,
mm-hmm.
30 Danny DeVitos, 50 Kermit the Frogs, which I imagine are not just the puppet before they're actually functioning.
Yeah.
12, I can't remember his last name, the guy from Nathan For You. His name is Nathan. And 10 ninjas, being the streamer, not the martial artists.
Pick 2, you say?
Pick 2, the rest are coming to kill you.
Go through again real quick.
15 Bernie Sanders, 1 Ellen DeGeneres, 7 Don Cheadles, 5 Papa Johns, 2 Dwayne Johnsons, 30 Danny DeVitos, 50 Kermit the Frogs, 12 Nathan For You's, and 10 ninjas.
My first choice is 50 Kermit the Frogs.
Really? That's your number one overall pick?
Because they can't die.
But you could tear the heads off of them.
They can't die, though.
You could just dismember them.
They can't die.
Are their arms still moving if you tear them off of the torso?
Yeah. They've got puppet powers, whatever those may be.
I think there's a hand in there. I think you have to assume there's a hand in there, basically.
So there's a dismembered hand moving them around?
Yes.
I'll still take them.
Or they're at least like animatronic. Like, I feel like you can shred them enough that not... when does it eventually stop? If you break them down into their individual atomic particles, are those atomic particles still strangling you in your sleep?
Oh, they're going to explode.
You're not splitting them yet. If it's just green felt and then also cotton, is that alive? I think if you decapitate a Kermit, it dies. Would be my argument.
Nobody's going to be mean enough to decapitate Kermit the Frog, though. And I've got 50.
If each Danny DeVito can just decapitate, like, 1.5 Kermit the Frogs, I'm in. Yeah, so your number one overall pick is Kermit the Frog.
And then probably The Rock.
You got to have two Rocks.
Yeah.
No one else on this list is bringing beef to the party. And...
Well, Papa John isn't anymore because he doesn't have a pizza place.
That's true. He's bringing grease to the party, though. I think I'm going 2 Dwayne Johnson's, 30 Danny DeVito's, because
Cheadle's my sleepy choice, my sleeper choice.
It's only 7 of him though.
I'm sleepy.
He's sleepy. Also, my favorite one is that Ellen DeGeneres. Someone said that Ellen DeGeneres could emotionally break down all of them in mere minutes. So that's why one.
She's
Ellen DeGeneres
just gonna
passive
aggressive me to death.
That's right. I'm going 2 Dwayne Johnson's,
30
Danny
DeVito's.
But
that's why I have The Rock there, because he's like the friendliest, and also Kermit the Frog. Counterbalance.
Now I'm just imagining Dwayne Johnson with Papa John in one hand and Ninja the streamer in the other one just sort of bashing their heads together.
Now here's a very important...
Playing them like cymbals.
Here's a very important ninja question.
Sure.
Does he have access to the horde? The followers?
No.
Okay.
No.
And it's just him by himself?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he's streaming it, but you know, he's getting paid to do it, but I think that's it. Anyway, there we go. Let's pivot back to the Chiefs side of things here and some on-field stuff, always sort of on-field stuff. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif opted out of the 2020 season. He was the first and so far only NFL player to do so. And that news came late Friday night. And yesterday, Andy Reid spoke to the media. And they talked about a lot of things, obviously, as training camp is just now re-beginning. But Reid talked a little bit about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's decision to opt out, and I just think this is really informative, really useful, and perhaps a good direction for everyone to try to follow suit with in terms of what exactly LDT is doing this year.
I'm a huge Larry Duvernay-Tardif fan, so and I also was raised by a doctor, so I understand the dedication that it takes to be a doctor. We're all blessed to have doctors in our lives. They're givers. They're not takers. They're givers, and they're healers. So they want the best for you. And so Larry has that quality, and you're seeing it to the utmost here. I just think it's tremendous dedication to his profession, what his future is going to be, and mainly to the people that he gets to help. And so my heart goes out to. I had a great talk with him, great visit with him. His players support him, the veteran players support him, and the coaches support him, and And we know, you know, we understand when football is over, this is going to be one of the greatest doctors ever. So it's we appreciate that. The great thing about doctors, the ones that I've been in touch with over my life here, and like I said, I was raised by one, and I've got three of my closest friends are doctors. So they're givers, man. They and they're not the takers. So they're very humble people that want to help you and heal you. And they're not out looking for, like Larry, they're not out looking for the pat on the back that they're doing this or that. They're not looking for attention. I mean, Larry is buried in. He's not looking to do interviews and all of this stuff. He's buried in and trying to get the work done that he needs to heal people. And man, I mean, what a dedication that is and a love that is. I'm so happy and proud of it.
I just don't know if there's anything else you need to say about it. And I also, again, I just think it should be something that everyone takes to heart, the way that Andy Reid discussed all of this. Like, eventually, maybe with the Chiefs and maybe otherwise, I don't know. Eventually, though, we're going to get an NFL player who's going to opt out because they're going to say, you know, I'm going into the last year of a deal. And I need to be healthy, and I'll play another year under the deal the next year whenever I know that I won't get COVID during the season. Or someone who just says, hey, I've got money, and maybe I'm older, and I'm not trying to, I'll take a year off, rest my body, and not worry about this season because of the risks. You might get somebody who says, hey, I've got a loved one that is especially at risk for one reason or another. I'm not going to play for that reason. You're going to get players who are going to choose not to play for a number of reasons. And whenever we get to those, they're going to be sacrificing money and a year of their careers and opportunity and all of that, and they're going to trade it out for safety. That's fine. Whenever that happens, it's going to be fine. I would be really bummed if Patrick Mahomes did that, but no one is under an obligation to play this year. Honestly, everyone has the opt out built in there. They have the option, just as so infrequently players have a choice in a matter like this. They have a choice to basically hit snooze on their contract and get back at it next year. And if that happens, it'll be okay. But that being said, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is a completely unique situation. 100% unique situation. There is no argument here in any for anything other than, wow, what a good thing he's doing. Just none. He's leaving money on the table. He's putting his starting job on the table. He might not get a starting job back. He is leaving the opportunity to defend a title with his teammates. He's losing another year of NFL careers that are so short. And he's doing it for less money in a more dangerous place. He is not choosing safety. He's choosing the opposite, but he's choosing to help. It's a completely inarguable stance and decision. Unless your argument is just like, I don't think I would have done that, and that's fine also. You might not have. I don't know if I would have. I have no idea. But you absolutely have to respect it. I just think that's non-negotiable. Reed talked about LDT one more time as well. I believe it was Vahid Gregorian who asked him if he saw any of the sort of offensive lineman's kind of protector philosophy in who LDT is and that kind of crossing over from the offensive line mindset into the doctoral mindset.
Yeah, you're taking me right into the little Greek philosophy there. I do. I know Larry, though. I mean, I've been with him here now since he came into the National Football League. So I get it. I mean, I just think it's what a tribute to him and to the profession. If I didn't know how doctors are wired, but I know. I mean, I've got it. I know exactly how they're wired and the love and dedication that they have to that, to protecting and healing. And so they're natural givers and healers. And so it didn't surprise me. No, it did not. To answer your question, like I said, I had a great visit with them. A unique situation.
I was surprised, and I felt silly for being surprised as soon as I read his statement on Friday night. I hadn't really thought about it, to be honest. I knew that the NFLPA and the NFL were working on an opt-out clause and trying to figure out those terms and everything, and I figured someone would opt out, and frankly, I figured the Chiefs would have someone who would opt out. But I didn't ever specifically think about LDT, and we should have, and none of us should be surprised by it. Like, I was certainly jolted by it, but from every moment since then, there's no surprise. It makes all the sense in the world. It's exactly who he is. And it's just, I hope he's a lock for the Walter Payton Man of the Year award this year as someone not playing. It feels like a layup. And I hope Chiefs fans are universally proud of what he's doing and are absolutely 0% angry that they lost a starting lineman. I'm guessing it won't be quite the 100% and 0% there that I was looking for, but I hope it's at least something like that. Also, Dan Sorensen just trucked Ryan Tannehill in the AFC Championship game. Rewind, that's playing on NFL Network right now. He was trying to scramble for it on 3rd and 11. Chris Jones and Tano Passanio chase him out of the pocket. Then Dan Sorensen just hit sticks him. Just drops him. It's great. We should rewatch this game more often. It's just fun. Remember when the Chiefs did the thing that went to the Super Bowl?
It was nice.
It was nice. All right, we can take a break. Whenever we come back, some more Chiefs stuff. We'll go back to the Royals here, though, at the top of the next hour with Max Reaper of Royals Review. Little Chiefs, little Royals, whenever we come back.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
It was painful, awkward television, and I enjoyed that, of course.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We don't have time right now to get to Rick Burkholder, the Chiefs head trainer, president of all sorts of things, and now the head of their their COVID operations. We'll try to get to that sound later today. If we run out of time, we'll do it tomorrow on Almost Entirely Sports, starting at 8 o'clock tomorrow night here on 810. But I do think it's been really interesting to see how exactly they've planned through what these preparations are going to look like and how confident they seem in just having the best setup they can. I think it's interesting. And also, Kelechi Osemele, again, signed last night by the Chiefs. He'll step in and at least compete for a starting guard spot immediately. I don't know if there's a chance that he and Andrew Wiley would flip sides. Maybe Wiley bounces to the right side, so Osemele could go to the left. But I would imagine the two of them, maybe Martinez Rankin, end up being the main guys competing for that guard spot. Also, though, Nick Allegretti going into his second year. He's most valuable at center at this point because he can do that. But still a lot of interesting things there to figure out. We got training camp battles again. That's exciting. But we've got baseball that's been good. We'll do that next.